Your dreams, ambitions, and priorities are what make you unique. With Associated Bank Private Wealth, we've got you. Our personalized approach to wealth planning puts your goals at the center of your plan. Visit associatedbank.com/private wealth. Member FDIC.
We're on This Morning with David Fowler from Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Doing very, very well. Before we get into some questions and our conversation this morning, I want you to tell people what you do there at Associated Bank.
Well, I work on the capital markets side of the bank, where we help our clients manage both foreign exchange risk, interest rate risk, and other types of financial risks that affect their businesses.
And we fondly here know you as our Brexit expert, and there's some Brexit news that I want to begin with this morning. Some developments this week. Tell us what's going on with Brexit and what is happening with Boris Johnson there and his view of this Brexit deal.
Last week, we saw kind of the introduction of a bill called the Internal Market Bill, which came as a bit of a bombshell, I think, for a lot of people. And this applies to the withdrawal agreement and the Northern Ireland protocols that were signed in January of this year. And this was an agreement between the UK and the EU in terms of how Northern Ireland, which is has the only physical land border that Britain has between itself and the European Union, how things would operate between Northern Ireland and the Republic, where the border is. And, you know, this was a deal that was a done deal. It was an international treaty, and everyone thought this was, you know, sitting there and, you know, we're done with this, we'll move on. Last week, we saw the introduction of a bill that would allow the UK, a UK minister, in fact, to unilaterally decide whether the terms of the protocol would be applicable or not. So you sign a, you know, from the European Union side, they have an international treaty. They expect the UK to uphold it. The UK has said, well, we are not going to uphold it if we believe it's going to be contrary to our interest. This bill came through Parliament. It was presented in Parliament on Monday and passed with a very substantial majority. And this has caused a lot of problems for the European Union and, frankly, for members of the Conservative Party, as well as the opposition in the UK as well. We've seen a number of resignations of government ministers, and particularly people on the legal side, so the equivalents of kind of attorney generals, because they believe that this would be contravention of international law. The European Union has said that unless this bill is withdrawn and killed by the end of September, then really there could be no negotiations going forward. So it is quite significant. It was interesting that this week we had the State of the Union address by the European President, Dr. Ursula von der Leyen. And, you know, in that conversation that she had with the European Union, her speech, Brexit really didn't feature. You know, it was much more about the response to the epidemic and basically a move towards a greener economy. And that might be an indication for Britain to understand that people may have, in the European Union, may have moved away from Brexit. This idea of reneging on a international treaty does not sit well, because not only does it affect this treaty, but even if there was an agreement made, how does the European Union know that the UK will honor its commitments?
And so yes, you know, yeah. So, David, I'm just want to jump in here and ask what the real result of all of this is going to be. Does this mean we'll see that? I know we've talked about the hard Brexit before. Does this mean that there's going to be no deal and it's just going to be over? Or will there be perhaps some new development that happens here?
Well, unless the bill is withdrawn, it's going to be very difficult for there to be a deal, because both sides have basically staked out their positions, and the European Union is not going to change. And frankly, you know, I think the UK has been looking for a reason to be able to say, you know, we tried everything we can, but, you know, the European Union is very intransigent, and therefore we have to go for a no-deal Brexit, which is really, I think, what they want anyway. Certainly that's what Boris Johnson said many, many times, that no deal is far better than a bad deal. So I think we are going to see a movement towards no deal. Today, the Irish government, basically in their forecast, their budgetary forecasts for 2021, are all based on a no-deal Brexit. And I think we're starting to see that become across the other member states as well. So I think we are moving towards a no-deal. The issue that is also bad for the UK in this one is that the original idea would be that if they didn't get a deal with the EU, they would have a deal with the US, which would compensate them. Congress has said, so Nancy Pelosi and even a bipartisan group of members of Congress sent a letter to the British government stating that if they break this deal, so if this law becomes, if this bill becomes a law, then there will be no trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. The U.K. have put themselves in a very dangerous spot. But it seems to be the one that they want. So,
well, so from an investment standpoint, if I'm an investor here in the United States who is investing in all of this and watching all of this, what is the plan here? I mean, what should my moves be? How's the best way to invest for this potential no-deal Brexit?
Well, I think right now the best time is to do nothing because it's still very volatile. But it's going to make it difficult for U.S. investors who probably were hoping to see a trade deal between Britain and the U.S., an expanded trade deal between Britain and the U.S., as a way of opening markets, whether it be from importing things from the U.K. to sell in the U.S. or exporting things from the U.S. to sell into the U.K. If there is no trade deal, then the attraction of entering the U.K. market from a U.S. investor's point of view is obviously diminished. And there is a lot of uncertainty. So I think for most people, it's going to be a situation where they're going to sit and wait, and that will just delay any kind of movement. So any investment plans, I think, will probably be put back at least 6 months, if not longer.
Yeah, do you you steer away then from the financials, away from the pound, or are there ETFs that you get involved in or avoid like the plague?
Well, I think certainly sterling will continue to move lower. Virtually every commentator that you see are looking for at least a 10-cent drop in the value of sterling against the dollar. So in one respect, in terms of taking in UK exports into the US, you know, they'll become cheaper in US dollar terms. It obviously will make it more difficult for the US to export into the UK because in pound terms, U.S. exports will be more expensive because the dollar will be stronger. But certainly, this is going to be something that could have wide-ranging effects, and some of them that won't be seen really for maybe the next 6 or 9 months, because on top of Brexit, we still have the issue with the coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So, you know, not only in the U.K., in the EU, and the U.S., I think in all of this, this has become, in Ireland, an expression, you know, when things are a complete mess, they're described as a dog's dinner. This is the mother of all dog's dinners as far as investing in the UK is concerned.
You know, as we position our portfolios, especially for no-deal Brexit, is it possible that moving assets completely out of the UK is something that you do in the short term or long term?
I think a lot of that has already been done, and we've seen a lot of movement of, for example, the U.S. banks that had large presence in the U.K. have reduced their presence and moved to other countries within the European Union. I think a lot of that kind of stuff is done. I think now it's going to be a bit of a wait and see, because on every horizon, everything is very uncertain. A hard Brexit is going to be difficult for both the European Union, for the U.S. in terms of expanding trade into Europe, but also, most importantly, for the U.K. I don't see any winners here.
I want to segue, too, into a larger conversation about the global economy, especially the pandemic economy, while we have you on, because I know you take a wider look and look at it from a global standpoint, and that is the winners and the losers that we're seeing in the last 5 or 6 months with this pandemic economy on a global scale. If you had to pick a couple of winners and losers, what would they be?
Well, I think it's very interesting to see when we look at how the indices, you know, the big stock indices are performing. If you take, for example, in the U.S., the NASDAQ in particular has been a really high-performing index this year compared to, for example, say, the Russell. And part of that is because when we look at the composition of the NASDAQ, it tends to be technology companies, biotech, bioengineering. And, you know, these are the things that fit into the new normal that we have. So, you know, 6 months ago, for a lot of people, the idea of working from home was either completely new or something that they only did on an occasional basis. Now, after 6 months, for a lot of us, this is the norm. And companies that are meeting the demands of the new norm are the ones that are doing well. So, you know, if we think about Amazon, you know, 25 years ago, you know, when Jeff Bezos was selling books out of his condo, you know, Neiman Marcus was a company that employed thousands of people with hundreds of stores across the country. Today, Amazon, according to Crain's, just recently, is one of the largest employers in the Chicago area, and Neiman Marcus is bankrupt. So companies that were, you know, focusing on the old normal are not doing well. But take Zoom. A year ago, somebody said they're going to give you a Zoom call, you wouldn't know what they were talking about. Now even the child does, because that's part of our new normal. And the indices that reflect companies that either create technology that enable this type of remote work or facilitate a remote lifestyle are the ones that are doing well as obviously companies that are involved in medical research, which, you know, is the other side of the NASDAQ. So I think this is going to continue, and maybe to an extent, the normal that we have now becomes the normal that we have going forward as well. Maybe not completely to the extent that we are today, but I think even with a vaccine or some kind of palliative treatment, you know, the idea of people going to the office 5 days a week may be under question going forward.
Would one of the old normals be, let's say, airline stocks and travel stocks? It seems like that's one of the sectors that has been really very slow to recover. I mean, here in the United States, we can't even travel to most countries out on an international basis. Do we unload those stocks or do we hang on to them?
Well, you know, I can't give you advice on particular stocks because that's not my area of expertise. But what I can say is that I think in a global sense, until there is a vaccine, and that vaccine is widely available around the world, it's difficult to see how people can travel widely. And I think, you know, regardless of whether they would, you know, can travel, will they want to? You know, do you want to take a holiday in a country where you're worried every day that you're going to get sick? That's not much of a holiday to me. So I think that type of wants rather than needs-based industries will continue to suffer until we see the end of this pandemic. But until we see that, I think we're not going to see people traveling. I don't think we're going to see people like restaurants and that kind of hospitality industry. They're going to be impacted. I don't see how they can't be.
Yeah, I saw one concerning statistic earlier this week where they talked about the coronavirus vaccine not being completely delivered to people and taken by everybody until sometime in 2024.
You know, they have to create a vaccine that can inoculate virtually the entire population of the world. That is a massive undertaking. And I think for anyone to think that this is going to be solved within 6 months, within 9 months, that's going to be very difficult. You know, it may be the case that in the U.S., for example, you know, you have a reasonable level of inoculation within the next 12 months. But, you know, what happens when people come from somewhere else? It's hard to see any kind of quick fix to this. And I was just looking at, for example, the German deputy finance minister was talking about the, you know, German economy and their side. And obviously the politicians, so it's going to be somewhat optimistic. They don't see the economy coming back to what was the, you know, kind of normal level of growth until 2022, 2023. So we are in kind of a long run here.
David, always good conversation with you. We appreciate it. How can people get in touch with you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, you can always call the desk, which is 866-524-8836, or you could reach me by email, which is david.feller, so that's david.feller at associatedbank.com.
Thanks for being with us today, David, and be well.
Thank you very much, Steve.